Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Like, I literally just halt dead in my tracks and the girls are like, what? And I say, he's here. And they're like, what do you mean he's here? I'm like, he's here. He's right in front of me. And they're crying. I'm just standing there, you know, they're clutching me and I'm just standing there. And they're like, what is he saying? What is he saying?
You're listening to The Ghost Files, the podcast where everyday people share their extraordinary experiences of the spirit world. My name is Karina Machado. I'm a journalist and the author of 3 books about real-life spooky and spiritual experiences. My guest this week, Rebecca Coombs, is the host of the Healthy Gut podcast, as well as an author, speaker, and mentor. Rebecca has had a lifetime of paranormal experiences. In fact, she was first on The Ghost Files in March to share the creepy tale of her weekend away in a very haunted house in the English city of Bath. Today, she's back to tell us about an incredibly moving encounter involving the spirit of a dear friend who sadly took his own life. You won't want to miss this story or its uplifting postscript. Before we get started, please note that if this issue raises concerns for you, support is available. You can call Lifeline in Australia on 13 11 14. Here's my conversation with Rebecca Coombs. Get ready for goosebumps. Hi, Rebecca, and welcome back to The Ghost Files.
Hi, Karina. It's wonderful to be back on your show.
Thank you for coming back to share another mind-boggling and heart-expanding story set in England, as your other experience was. But this is a very different kind of story, isn't it, Rebecca?
This one is. This one was very emotional, very unexpected, but in a way was beautiful at the same time.
And was this before or after the experience in the haunted house in Bath that you shared with us earlier?
This one happened after that Bath experience. I felt like that experience in Bath just opened the floodgates to my little spidey senses, even though they were already there. But I wonder whether I would have been able to have this experience had it not been for my very ghostly experience in the house in Bath in England.
And as you'll go on to share with us, the experiences share a couple of things in common as well. Despite being very different, there are some common factors.
Yes, there are. So, and what's interesting is as the years have gone on since these two experiences, that now seems to be a common theme. So I will share what that is, but your listeners are now thinking, what on earth is she talking about? What are the common experiences she has with her ghostly experiences?
Well, let's go there. Tell us what was going on in your life when this was. Just set it up for us a little bit so that we get a sense of how things were panning out for you when this all took place.
So this next experience occurred in the mid 2000s. I'd been living in the UK in London for quite a few years at this point. I was in my mid 20s and I had an amazing group of friends of all sorts of nationalities and was absolutely loving life when this next experience occurred. Very unexpected, very out of the blue, and it was the first time I ever had to deal with anything like this.
Please share with us what happened.
A friend of mine very sadly committed suicide one night in London, and it was my first experience dealing with somebody that had got to a point where they felt that that was their only choice. I'd never, obviously you hear about the ramifications on the people that are left when suicide occurs, but I had to experience that firsthand, and it was profound and so sad to see that, you know, this friend of mine felt that that's what he had to do, and then just the the ripple effect it had. And I used to think, if only he knew how many people his death has affected and how much it's affected all of us. To set the scene, I was living with two of my best friends in London. There was a very strong connection with my friend who passed away. One of my flatmate sisters had been going out with him. And so we knew him. I wouldn't say I was best friends with him, but I'd spent a reasonable amount of time with him. We knew him pretty well. And he was part of our overall group of friends. So I got the call the day after he committed suicide. I was out shopping, actually. I think I was on Kensington High Street shopping, and one of my flatmates called and told me that he had passed away. And I was just so shocked, went home, and, you know, one of my flatmates, she and I came back to the flat together, and we just sat there just crying and commiserating and hugging each other and just saying, you know, why and how and oh my gosh. And our other flatmate was with her sister and the immediate group of friends that had been living with him, as they were just dealing with those very immediate hours after something like this occurs. And over the next couple of days, you know, as we just, you know, as you just experience the fallout of something like this, it really got me thinking about, you know, I have this skill, if that's what you want to call it, of being able to connect with spirits, energies, people that have passed over. And I really started to think about my friend and really think about, you know, wonder if I could connect with him. I had been sitting down one evening with my flatmate, and we just, you know, we'd been at work that day, and we came home and we had some dinner together. We'd had a glass of wine together, and we just sat there talking about him, about all the wonderful things that we remembered about him, the things that we had enjoyed about his company, and just, I guess, reminiscing and sharing the good times. You know, feeling very sad about it, but trying to think about the positives about his life and the impact he'd had on us. We went to bed. I went off to my room. She went off to her room. And I wasn't ready for sleep yet. And I sat on the end of my bed, and I sat there, you know, fully awake, fully conscious. It wasn't like I'd been asleep and then woke up. I was very much awake. And I sat on the end of my bed, and I thought, I've got a skill. I wonder if he can feel me or if he knows I'm here. And then I thought, how do spirits know I can connect with them? Like, what is it about me? How do they find me? And so I started to imagine looking at the world, but from quite a way away in space, so I could see the full circumference of the world. And then I imagined that people like myself are like bright beams of light that shoot out into the atmosphere, that are a beacon, like a lighthouse, guiding the spirits to them if they need to be found. And so as I was visualizing the globe with various beams of light jutting out of it, I suddenly felt like I had been electrocuted. And I actually thought that the light fitting, which I was sitting directly underneath, had fallen from the ceiling and hit me and electrocuted me. It was such a painful and kind of strong zap that I experienced. And I look up, and the lights are still on and the light fitting is still in the ceiling. And I realize that my room is pulsating with energy and I'm getting zapped. And that was the thing that I got with my experience in Bath in England, where I was being zapped pretty violently by the blue light. And I think because I had had that experience already, I was like, oh, somebody's here. And I then, rather than being scared, I thought, okay, well, Rebecca, you just put this out to the universe. So you were just imagining how people that have passed can find you. You got it quicker than you thought. So somebody's here to deliver a message. And I sat back down on the bed and sort of closed my eyes gently and just said to myself, I'm ready to accept the message. And opened my eyes again and kind of was looking around the room, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready for the message. And then instantly my whole vision was taken up as if I was looking at the widest screen, cinema screen that you've ever seen, that is so wide it blocks out everything from your vision. So my peripheral vision was gone, my immediate vision was gone. And it was my friend. It was a close-up of his face, so all I could see was his face. There was nothing else there, and it was a kind of a white background. It was a black and white image. There was zero color to this. And he then showed me why he committed suicide through the expressions on his face. So there was no language. There was not even a message that I was receiving as such in a word form or even a thinking form. It was just pure emotion on a face.
And so then, were you then feeling that emotion as well?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was very much like I was the emotion. I was his face. It was he and I were kind of one. And it was, I mean, it was very sad. It was, you know, hurt and betrayal and anger and fear and frustration. But each expression was like a millisecond. So it was flash, 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 as he told me the why. But it was microseconds. It just felt like it was almost like those old-fashioned black and white films where it kind of flicks through the image, but it was super fast. And I just, you know, I was just there just with my eyes wide open, just watching him deliver his message, flick, 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 and then gone. And the whole time that he was telling me his message, I was vibrating. I had the most incredible electric current coursing through my body. My room was, it felt like it was shaking. And I felt like I literally had someone with a cable attached to me, and they were just pumping me full of electricity. And then the final image that he showed me was just such despair and sadness. And then he was gone. And the moment he was gone, the room stopped vibrating. There had almost been like a shimmering, before I saw his face, there had been a shimmering to the room. It was like, you know, when you look off in the distance and there's that shimmering on the horizon on a hot surface. That's what my room had become like. That disappeared, the energy disappeared, the zapping disappeared, and then my room went back to normal. And I was left on my bed so overwhelmed because I'd never had anything like that happen before, thinking, oh my gosh, what do I do with this? How on earth am I going to tell my friends what I've just experienced?
Rebecca, it's just an utterly extraordinary experience on so many levels. I mean, the intentionality of it and your hyperconscious state throughout, that's just one aspect that strikes me. You know, you were sitting on the bed, you made this happen. You fell into this kind of meditative state, and that seemed to open a kind of portal to connecting. But at no point were you asleep, at no point, you know, were you not fully participating in this? And I find that utterly amazing. And it makes your experience unique, I feel.
It does. I'd never brought a spirit to me like I had with him. They'd always appeared and frightened me with their surprise, we're here kind of experience. Whereas I mean, I hadn't called to him directly. I hadn't said, hey, friend, and obviously I won't mention his name, but come. But I had been thinking about him and I had imagined how one might find me. So I guess that was enough for him.
I think the other thing I wanted to just pull out of it is how you knew that you are a beacon. You people who have a skill, you called it. Others might call it a gift, yet others might call it a curse. You are said to shine like beacons to the spirit world, and lost souls or spirits that need help or perhaps others that that are not lost but simply want to communicate will find their way to you. And it's such a beautiful image that you painted there of the lights jutting out of the earth and you being one of them. You know, I just thought that it was quite beautiful.
Yeah, it was, you know, I'd never thought about that before, and it was really interesting how that night that's what I imagined us to be. I would say at that point in my time, I didn't know very much about being a conduit. I just knew what happened to me, and I've since gone and, you know, listened and read and learned so much more about it. Also, thanks to podcasts like yours, which really helped to hear other people's stories. And podcasts didn't exist in those days. I wish they had. I would have felt less alone with this experience and this skill. But it was amazing how my friend found me out of all of the people that were desperately sad and mourning his loss, that I was the one. And with that also came a lot of questions to myself, like, why me? Why not one of the others? We were friends, but we weren't best friends. I wouldn't have called him my closest friend. I really enjoyed his company. I had spent a good amount of time with him, but he had way closer friends. And I was like, why do I get the message? What is it about me that makes me the person that now has to figure out how do I tell all of my friends this message? Because this is crazy. Because who's going to believe that he came to me and told me why through facial expressions when he didn't leave a note? You know, that was really, it was a heavy burden to bear that night. I didn't sleep much that night as I pondered the realities of, do I tell people? Do I not tell people? You know, and thinking, well, if I was them, I would want to know. But it wasn't a good message. It wasn't a, I'm sorry and I love you all. It was, I'm hurt and so upset and sad and betrayed. That's why I've done it, not a message of love at that point in time. And that is very hard.
So hard. And it's so powerful how he let you know that, and you not only saw via the expressions on his face in the vision, but you also felt it as if you were one, as you said, going through it. And I can imagine that that must have been such a burden. And before we go into talking about what you indeed did decide to do the next day and who you did decide to tell, Rebecca, I just want to pick up on the question that you asked yourself, which is kind of the million-dollar question, why me? And my sense is to say, well, you could do it. You could see him. And why that should be, that question I can't answer. But I think there are clues in your physiological makeup, perhaps, because again, we've got this experience of the electricity, which is something very physical and tangible that's going on in your body, the frequency of the vibration and the electricity. I wondered if you could reflect on that, like what you think that is, and maybe even tap on the experience that happened in Bath. For any listeners who haven't yet heard that story, I encourage you to go and listen, go back into the podcast and listen to that episode. But yeah, what do you think about that electrical kind of current that sets apart your experiences?
That's a really good question. And I've actually, I don't know that I've ever really pondered it. It just is, it just happens. So I just take it for, well, that's just how my experiences occur. What is interesting is that I always get the electrical zap first these days, when there is a very profound experience to be had. And, you know, it's like an opening of the door. It's like someone presses a doorbell. It's a notification. We're here, or I'm here. Take note, listen to what's going on. And maybe it is that connection of planes. I'm not sure. It's a really interesting question. And now it's really got me thinking about it. And I'm like, I need to go and read a bit more about this and try and learn about what is this electric field or currency that or current that goes through me. The fact that I've seen the electricity with the blue electric thing in Bath, and do go listen to that, guys, if you haven't, because that was pretty profound. That's the only time I've seen the electricity. The rest of the time it's just a very sensory, pulsating, painful at the start experience when it, you know, it's like that feeling when you get zapped by something, but like 1,000 times stronger. So, you know, you might touch something if you've been getting a bit of static electric energy, like walking on carpet with some particular types of shoes, and you touch a surface and you go, ooh, that was a bit of a zap. It's just like that feeling, but really strong, like you've been electrocuted, not just a quick zap. So,
and it's interesting because the electrical malfunctions are reported a lot around people who have skills like yours, Rebecca. And so, for instance, you know, computers, phones, watches, when people used to wear them more often, they'd always malfunction. And so that's kind of connected, I think, to what you're describing. Also, people who report near-death experiences and then come back from those will often interfere all the time with electrical appliances and all sorts of things. So there's definitely something fascinating going on there. The other interesting thing that people do report is a static or a feeling of kind of the air before a thunderstorm, which is that kind of sense, staticky sense, prior to some sort of experience of a spiritual nature or seeing an apparition. So that also makes me think of your experience. So yeah, there's definitely so much to explore there. It's just so intriguing.
It really is. And even the shimmering, like, oh, sorry, my printer's just decided to start making noise. I hope that's not coming through in the recording.
No, it's not. But is that, I wonder if that's electrical.
It's just turned itself on and it's making some noise. Oh, thanks, printer.
We should leave that in because that's extraordinary.
My spidey senses, somebody's just gone, you're talking about playing with some electricity? Well, here you go. That is really funny. Oh, gosh. So I was about to say the shimmering of the surface, like when you're looking at a really hot surface, you know, that's interesting because it is affecting the vision of my current dimension. I was in my bedroom in London it wasn't complete winter, but it wasn't warm weather, and suddenly my whole room is shimmering, and like it's like waves of reality. It's really bizarre how that occurs. And I was listening to one of your other episodes with a woman talking about that, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's what I get. So that was really, it was actually really great to know that others have experienced that shimmering as well.
I was going to bring that up because I knew as you were saying that, I thought to myself, I have heard that recently. And it wouldn't have been the first or second time either. So I've certainly heard that before, which I just love when we can pick out those common elements. You know, it just helps us tie in everything, and it validates, I think, it validates the experiences as well.
It does, because these are often very isolating. You're often on your own, or if you do have people around you, they can't see what you can see, as occurred at the second part of my story today. So you do feel very alone with this skill, and it's nice to know through modern technology these days that there are others that are like you. And when I first started trying to learn more about this, you know, I'd be reading books and all the rest, but hearing somebody else's story through their own voice, I think is even more profound than when you read a book, because you really hear the emotion and the experience of that person went through. And then when you pick out elements, you go, well, I get that and I get that. It it is really comforting, and you think, oh, yay, I'm not the crazy lady.
You're not the crazy lady, not at all. And I, yes, I love that you note that, because it's true. I mean, I guess it all harks back to that kind of tradition of oral storytelling around the fire. And these experiences in particular really lend themselves to that. And I love how my work's been able to evolve from the books to the podcasts. And it certainly has expanded that dimension. And I think it's enriched it, as you say. Yeah.
Yeah, it really has. And I think tapping into something that is innately human, which is storytelling, and it comes, we've been doing it for so long, and we often forget the art or the power of storytelling in our modern world. And I think that's why podcasts are so popular, because it is storytelling, and that's what we've been doing for millennia.
Speaking of storytelling, and you're a wonderful storyteller, Rebecca, please tell us what happened next. So the next day, you didn't sleep much that night. What did you end up deciding to do with this really profound and personal information that your friend had delivered?
I got up the following morning, and my friend, my housemate, got up at a similar time, and I came out of my room, she came out of hers, and she said, "Oh gosh, you look terrible. You look like you've seen a ghost." Oh, and I said, "Well, actually, I have." And she has known me for a long time. We met at school, so and I'm really grateful that she does not discount what I say. She very much believes what I say when I talk about these experiences, and she just kind of stopped dead in her tracks, and she said, "Who?" And I said, "Our friend came to visit me last night." And she was like, "Oh my gosh, oh my gosh," and kind of ran over to me, and she's like, what did he say?" And I said, "Well, he told me why." And we just stood there and we kind of cried, and I told her what he had delivered to me. And I said, "I don't know what to do with this." And she said, "Wow, that's really intense." And I said, "You know, our friend's sister, like, I feel like she needs to know, but I don't think she needs to know now. Like, this is really, it's not the happy ending. It's not a happy message." And she said, "No, I agree. I don't think she needs to know right now." And she said, "Why don't we tell our other housemate? Why don't I tell our other housemate, who is the sister? She can then decide whether she wants to hear." She said, "I won't tell her the details. I'll just tell her he came to you. And then if she feels that she wants to hear the message, she can ask you. If she doesn't feel that she needs to or wants to hear the message, then she doesn't have to." And I said, "That's a good idea." So she told our other housemate. Our other housemate was like, "Wow, oh my gosh, I don't know I'm ready for this yet, but thank you for telling me. I'm glad he's made contact," and didn't even question it, which was, again, relieving for me, because it's very easy for people to say, "You're crazy. This is not true. Why are you inserting yourself in this story?" And there are some people in the broader group that felt that way, that do not believe what my experience was. And that's okay. That's their choice and viewpoint. And I'm not going to force anybody to believe what I experienced. So when the time was right, and we really didn't see our other housemate for some time. She was there just being a good sister to her sister, who was going through hell. But when the time was right, she approached me and she said, "I think I'm ready to hear it, and I want to hear it before my sister. I need to be the gatekeeper for her, because she's really quite broken from this experience, and I need to protect her." And I said, "Of course, that's fine." I said, "But I need to preface by saying it's not a happy ending and it's not a happy story." And she said, "Okay, well, that's fine." So we sat down one night and I told her exactly as I have said it, but with all the details. And she said, "Okay, my sister is not ready for this at all, but I'm going to tell her he contacted you, because I think she will find some peace or comfort in knowing that he did make contact." And so she did tell her. The message came back from her sister saying, thank you. I'm glad he's made contact with somebody. I'm glad somebody knows. I'm not ready. But can I tell you when I am? And I'd like you to tell me this, you know, the details of when I am. So some months later, when she felt strong enough to hear it, she came over for dinner and I said to her, you know, I need you to be fully aware that this is not a happy ending, that the message he delivered was not a happy message. I don't want to tell you the details until I feel that you're really ready for this. And she said, I've spent a lot of time thinking and I'm ready. I really am ready for whatever it is. And I kind of reiterated again, are you sure? And she said, yes. And so the two of us went and sat in a room, just the two of us, and I then told her. And she thanked me for it. And, you know, there's a lot of tears from both of us. And she said, I'm really glad he found somebody to tell, because he wasn't able to leave a note to tell us why. And I'm glad somebody knows. And she said, are you okay if I tell other people in the group? And I said, sure. But there will be people that don't believe me or you in telling this. And I'm not telling this to cause a scene or, you know, I'm just a messenger. So please understand that I never wanted this. I'm here to deliver his message. So, you know, that was kind of that, how it ended at that point in time. And there is a second chapter to this story, but that's where we got to at that time.
Hearing you sort of explain how all of that panned out with you sharing the details with your friends, loved ones, it strikes me that it would have taken quite a bit of courage for you to do this. So even if you did, you know, step so delicately and preface, you know, and all of that, it still would have taken courage to do, because this is something that we're not meant to be able to do. And this is also such a delicate and sensitive situation as well. So, yeah, I just wanted to commend you on your courage in sharing it.
Thank you. It was pretty tough, I'll be honest, yeah. And particularly when it involves the death, the suicide of someone's partner, and part of the messages about that partner. It's very hard as the third person, the messenger, to be truthful and not, I mean, she's a good friend. I didn't want to hurt her, but I didn't want to not tell her the full message either. So, you know, and I think it was good that we all took our time with it, and it would have been too raw, too upsetting if I'd gone in and, you know, immediately told all of the information in those early days. It would not have been the right thing to do. So I think we all did the right thing in waiting the months that we waited before I gave her the complete message.
And there is a postscript, as you say. Tell us, please, what happened. I think it was 3 months later, was it, Rebecca?
It was some months later. I can't remember exactly how long now, but it might have even been 6 or 7 or 8 months, because when he passed away, it was the cold weather. And then when this next chapter occurred, we were in the midst of summer, and my two housemates and I, and a whole bunch of our other friends, including many of my friends' friends who'd passed away, we had went to Glastonbury Music Festival. And Glastonbury is positioned, the farm that it's held on is positioned on the intersection of two positive ley lines. There's the most incredible energy at that place. And I've been there a couple of times to the festival, and I just, like, I can feel it. It is like a really strong kind of electric and energy current for me. Now, it's not, wouldn't be like that for everybody, but for me, it's really strong. Mm. And I've been there on years when it's rained in biblical proportions. And but this one year I went, it was sunny at the start of the festival, which is actually pretty rare for Glastonbury. It's normally a mud fest. And we'd arrived to the festival a couple of days early, and we'd set up our camp, and then we were walking down towards the cider tent, and the sun was shining. I had my girlfriends on either side of me. I think we even had our arms interlinked. We were so happy to be at Glastonbury. It was just the most perfect afternoon. And I'm walking along, and then there is my friend in full form, full color, standing right in front of me. And I just stop dead in my tracks.
I'm just full of goosebumps right now.
And he used to wear a cap, a brightly colored cap, and he'd always wear it backwards. And he's standing there with his signature cap on, and he had a really beautiful smile, really big grin, and he's just standing there, hands in his pockets, grinning at me with his cap on. And I literally just halt dead in my tracks, and the girls are like, "What?" And I say, "He's here." And they're like, "What do you mean he's here?" I'm like, "He's here. He's right in front of me." And they're crying. I'm just standing there, you know, they're clutching me and I'm just standing there. And they're like, "What is he saying? What is he saying?" And again, there was no language between us, but it was all through his face and his kind of emotion that I then felt. And he just stood there and he kind of grinned and he nodded his head at me. And the message that came to me was, "Tell everyone I'm happy. Tell everyone I've found my peace. I'm okay." And just grinned and grinned and grinned. And then I was like, "Thank you so much for telling me. Thank you for coming back to let me know," because so many of us were all together at that place. And I stood there and I'm crying and the girls are crying and he's just smiling at me. And then he just disappeared. He was just gone. And the girls, and then I kind of came out of it, out of the, you know, connection, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, he's okay, everybody, he's okay." And the three of us are sobbing and hugging, and the other people are like, "What on earth is happening?" Because like no one else could see him except for me. And I'm like, "He's okay, he's okay." And it was just such a relief to know that he'd been in so much pain that he then came back to tell me that he'd found peace and he was happy. And also really interesting is the fact that he had been black and white and only his face. And when he returned, he was in full color, full form. There was no see-through element. He was full bodied, full, like as if he was in his kind of living life standing right in front of me. There was nothing I could see through about him. It was him, whole, complete and happy, and he looked so happy. It looked like the old him, like the guy that I'd known before he decided to commit suicide.
Well, I can imagine your immense relief to see him. How far away from you do you think he stood?
Only like, I don't know, a couple of feet. He was right in front of me. It was like he had just stepped through the crowd and just appeared. He was right there. So
you didn't reach out to try and touch him?
No, because I think I was so stunned to see him. I was shocked. I just didn't know what to do. I wasn't expecting to ever see him again, I suppose, because I'd had no other contact with him. I'd actually tried to make contact with him again, given that I'd, you know, imagined the world and imagined the spokes of light, and I'd tried to, you know, reach out because I thought, well, maybe I could help, or maybe he's got more for me, but he'd never come through. And so I just thought, well, he's gone, he's passed on, and that's it. But to have him return was stunning, beautiful, but really, really shocking and surprising. But I feel at peace with his passing now because I know he found his peace and he found his happiness finally.
What a healing moment. I can imagine that would have been. And so you shared with your friends that were there with you at the festival, and then did you also share with perhaps some of his loved ones that weren't there with you later on?
So I shared it with the immediate people that I had shared it with the first time, and then I really stepped back and let them share it. I didn't have any connection with his family, but I was happy for people to tell his family if they wanted to. It was funny. I felt like if they had contacted me and asked me to talk about it, then I would have happily shared it with them, but I didn't want to interject myself in their loss and their grieving process. So I was quite reserved with it. There were people at the festival that accused me of lying and accused me of all sorts of things and were quite angry at me saying what I had experienced. There were people in complete belief and did not doubt it or question it for a second. And I think because my two girlfriends were with me when he appeared and they could see me, obviously they couldn't see him, but they watched what I went through. And it was obviously completely real for them. Like, I wouldn't make it up. I'm not a person that makes things up. I'm very truthful, sometimes too truthful. I'm a very honest person. So I think for them being able to witness watching me go through the exchange with him, they could then say to others, you know, we saw her, we watched what she went through. Like, that was real. Why would anybody make that up? And why would you do it when you're at a festival walking to go and get a cider? Like, why then? but not everybody believes.
Well, that's you know, that's up to everybody. And I think that had I been there at your side that day, I would have just been thrilled to be able to witness such a thing. I mean, I think it's the closest that some of us are going to get to, you know, having one of these experiences. So I think, yeah, that would have just been astounding.
Yeah, and they both have said to me, I wish I could see him. I wish I could see what you see. It would be so wonderful to see it. So, you know, it was a shame that they couldn't see him and that they can only go off my description of how happy he looked to me and felt to me. But, you know, it's nice to be able to at least pass that on and give some kind of closure, because I know that that doesn't occur for so many people, and it's really lovely to know that he got the closure he needed.
That is so lovely, and it's lovely for our audience to be able to hear both parts of that story today. And they are such, you know, it is such a wonderful story. It expands the mind and heart, and I think, you know, we'll all be the better for hearing it, you know, if we can take it in and take in its message. And to me, the message is, you know, I've heard it time and again, obviously. I host this podcast and the other one, Spirit Sisters, as well, but I'll never tire of the message, and that is, if you agree with me, Rebecca, there is no death.
Yeah, it's really interesting that there is still an there. We can still have connection even beyond the physical sense, and I think that it does give me an element of comfort that there is something else. And, you know, whatever you believe in, that you know, whether you believe in a God or not, that there is an ability to have connection beyond the grave or beyond the urn, and that's really nice.
It's really nice indeed. I wonder if since then, have you been zapped again? Have you had any kind of experience that's up, you know, up with this one in terms of its power?
I haven't had anything quite like this. I mean, that's a pretty unique experience. And I also haven't had such a close friend commit suicide. And so, you know, who knows if I ever go through that again. Maybe I might, but I hope I don't. Because I think suicide is is so sad for everybody involved to experience it. But I've had plenty of other experiences, and in fact, just very recently, I had a very strong premonition involving my father. And what was really nice is that it feels like I've changed the course of his future. And my parents now know to listen when I call them and say, I've had a feeling. And I did have a feeling about my dad. And I said, you have to do something differently. If you don't do it differently, you're actually going to die. And I need you to do this differently. And he did, and the feeling's gone. So it was really, it's really good. Hooray.
Oh, wow. That sounds It almost sounds like another episode.
Oh, I could do lots about my premonitions. There's been many that have that I've had and they've come true. So not always good, sadly, but it was really nice that I could change to a point anyway my dad's future, and he listened, which was good.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that your dad is well, and I can't let you go though without asking, what can an encounter with the dead teach us about living?
Well, I think it's really that, you know, let's all enjoy the moments that we have on this plane, and really cherish each other and the relationships that we have, because, you know, it's amazing that even though, you know, with my friend, I didn't think that he and I were that close, but I've got a connection now with him that nobody else in the world has, and I really cherish that. I think it's a really special thing.
Connection. That's a lovely note to end on, and especially in the times that we're all going through now, you know, cherishing those relationships is very, very important, if not the most important thing at the moment. So thank you, Rebecca, for that lovely message and that end note, and thank you for coming back on the Ghost Files to share this absolutely, you know, beautiful, heartbreaking experience. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show again.
Thank you for listening to The Ghost Files. I'm always so happy to read your feedback. So if you love The Ghost Files, please take a moment to rate and review the show and tell a friend.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.